Writer Jonathan Schell is best known for his book The Fate of the Earth, an examination of how life has been changed by the existence of nuclear weapons. Published in 1982, it was quickly dubbed the Bible of the Disarmament Movement, although Schell says when he started the book, there was no movement. Controversy is no stranger to Schell because the topics he writes about are both politically and emotionally charged. He began his career at The New Yorker, writing about the Vietnam War, the Nixon White House, and later the Watergate crisis. For a while, word was Schell was being groomed as the successor to New Yorker editor William Shawn. Schell left The New Yorker in 1988, at about the same time the magazine changed ownership and Shawn resigned. Schell's notes and comments pieces from The New Yorker are collected in a new book called Observing the Nixon Years. I asked him how he came to write about Vietnam.
Well, it's something I thought of doing for quite a while, but it seemed wrong to try to do it as long as I was continuing to write notes and comment for The New Yorker, because, as you know, those are not signed pieces. They really spoke for the magazine, and so to come out and affix my name on them seemed wrong as long as I was writing them. But now that I've stopped, there seemed to be a justification for doing that.
I assume that you reread all the pieces before they were compiled in this anthology.
Yes.
Was it like a flashback for you, reliving those years?
Well, yes, it was. It was surprising in many ways to be reminded of what was going on back then, of how dire things really became.
What were some of the feelings that came back to you that surprised you?
Well, I think a feeling of the precariousness of our whole governmental system, of our constitutional system, especially in the later years of the war in Vietnam and the early years of Watergate. It became very clear to me. I felt it at the time, but I felt it in a new way, perhaps, looking back, that we were really on a razor's edge there in those very last years when the war was coming to its end and at the same time the Watergate crisis was unfolding. And the reason for that is that the thing I specifically feared the most at the time was that the victory of the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, which I regarded as inevitable, I feared that that would come while Richard Nixon was still in office. And since he was on record publicly as saying that really the freedom of the whole free world depended on the survival of that regime, I feared that he would take drastic action if it began to crumble. And now, as we know, of course, he made secret promises to President Chu of South Vietnam to re-intervene in the war. Finally, we know that he did, in fact, launch that terrible so-called Christmas bombing by B-52s of Hanoi just before signing the peace agreement, as a reminder, really, to the North Vietnamese that they'd better not try anything because his response would be savage. So I think it was a great piece of good fortune for this country that Richard Nixon was removed from office before South Vietnam fell to the communist forces.
You were in Vietnam during part of 1966 and 1967 on assignment for The New Yorker.
Yes.
Why did you want to go to Vietnam to write about it?
Well, it was a little accidental, frankly. I had been living and studying in Japan for a year and a half, and I had a ticket home that permitted me to stop anywhere around the world. And in a slightly haphazard way, I stopped in Vietnam and formed the ambition to try to write something about it, and eventually did so. So it was there was a large element of accident there.
Were you of draft age?
Yes.
And how did you handle that?
Well, I was a student, and I always had a student deferment.
Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself still getting into the same debates that you did 20 years ago?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. And there's a very specific reason for that. And it's that the overall justification for the war in Vietnam has been used again to justify intervention in Central America, for example. And although people are fond of saying Vietnam is not Latin America, and that's decidedly so, the policy for by which the government justifies its action in Latin America is the same as the one in Vietnam. And that policy says that we have to fight every local rebellion and revolution as if it were really the advance wave of an assault by Moscow on the United States. It's a little hard to maintain that in the era of Glasnost, but still it goes on. And so I do find myself in some of those same arguments because I have the same, there's the same underlying policy in effect, and I think it's wrong.
I want to ask you about a previous book of yours, Fate of the Earth, which was basically a philosophical inquiry into what it means to live with nuclear weapons and with the possibility of extinction. What led you to this subject?
I was thinking about politics. I was thinking about the Vietnam War. I was thinking about our domestic politics. And the more I thought about all those things, the more I found it necessary to think about the nuclear question. It was as if no matter what subject you pursued, eventually it led to that.
One of your observations that really stuck with me is your observation that you can't get rid of knowledge. You can't get rid of the knowledge of how to destroy ourselves. Once the scientific discovery of the bomb is made, you can't get rid of it. Even if you ban the weapons and tear down the factories, the knowledge exists to build them all over again.
It does. But I believe we can get rid of the weapons, nevertheless. And actually, one of the reasons is the very fact that the knowledge is there. Because anybody who would try to reintroduce them into a world from which they'd been removed would have to know that that the adversary or any number of adversaries could do likewise. And so it would be just as fruitless to head down the path of nuclear conflict.
So you still advocate complete disarmament?
Definitely.
Nuclear disarmament. Yeah. A lot of policymakers called your book naive.
Yes.
What was your response to that?
Well, you know, the threat that faces us is ending human life. And if it's realistic to do that, then I'm happy to be naive.
There were accusations after the book was published that you had plagiarized certain ideas from a book by a German philosopher on the atomic age. How was that resolved?
It was resolved by my taking libel action in Germany in court and winning the case.
How did that story come up? What have you since found out about it?
There was a writer, and I haven't found out much about it. I don't speak German, so I was unable to read the articles in question, as a matter of fact, unable to read the pieces that were I was accused of plagiarizing. So I still don't know a lot about it, except that a writer in a German publication made this accusation, and it was false, and I proved it in court.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense that there's been a slowing down of the anti-nuclear movement?
Yes, there has been.
What do you think that's a response to?
It just seems that it's not something that people can bear to keep in the forefront of their minds for very long at a time. Actually, that's one reason I think that it's useful to have an intellectual grasp of it, too, because intellectually you can hold it in your mind and kind of thereby remember what you felt and thought in those moments when you faced it emotionally. Because that's the problem with this issue, is that we think about it, we get horrified, and then we forget about it again. So I think a good, solid intellectual grasp can sort of cover us in the period when we're just unable to look at it emotionally. And that seems to be simply human. I wouldn't urge anybody to try to go around with a full feeling of the horror of nuclear war every minute of the day.
I want to thank you very much for talking with
us. Well, thank you.